and welcome to another Meta Media production of JW on Purpose with your host, JW Najarian, as he interviews and discusses business, finance, self-development, and lifestyle.
Hello, everybody. This is JW Najarian, and we're on with the wonderful, incomparable Dave Austin. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great. Great to be with you, JW. I know we've been meaning to do this for some time. I'm glad that we finally have pulled it off.
Finally. I've been trying to get you on for a long time, and I really appreciate you. Your schedule's really been tight and busy, and you're traveling all over the world and speaking everywhere and working on all kinds of projects. So glad to have you, and I understand we have you for a couple minutes before your next deal, at least 40 minutes, so we can really get down to some good stuff.
I'm looking forward to it.
Go ahead. What were you saying?
I was going to say, you and I have always had great conversations, so this will be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So, everybody, if you don't know Dave, I'm going to have you kind of, instead of reading a boring bio, Dave, let's go over, you started out young as a, where were you born? Where'd you grow up?
Well, that's even a tough question. No, I was born in Oakland, California, but my dad was a chaplain in the Navy. So that means when you're in the service, you move every two or three years. So I had a chance to see a lot of the country at a very young age. Maybe that's why I move and travel, all over. Even though I live here in Rancho Santa Fe, I still travel a lot, but I guess it's in my blood.
Oh, there you go. And you got a great traveling companion, your wife, of course.
Oh, absolutely. And I have four wonderful boys.
Oh, that's great. What's your ages?
Well, they're spread out. I have a 33-year-old who, a 34. Oh, my gosh, he turned 34. Where did that happen? How did that happen?
You must have had him at 9 years old, right?
Yeah, you got it. You got it right. You got it. I started when I was 9. I love it. But that was through a first marriage, and it's when I played professional tennis, and I was traveling all over the world. So he had a chance at, in diapers to grow up all over the place. Now, Kathy and I have been married for 25 years, and we have three. Shane, who is 22 and plays quarterback at the University of Hawaii, so we love going out to his games. It's hard to go there, right?
Oh, and then too bad you got to go to the game.
we have a son that is 16 who plays football. He's a sophomore in high school here in Torrey Pines, where we live. And then we have a 13-year-old who is in seventh grade. So if you think about this, there was 1 year, believe it or not, where Jason, my oldest, was 24. Half of 24 is 12, and that was Shane. Half of 12 is 6, and that was Chase. Half of 6 is 3, and that is Daniel. And that can't be planned. That wasn't anywhere even close. It's just like, whoa, how did we do this? I think that, the answer to that is that, Jason was obviously through my first marriage, and then Kathy had really thought about never having, kids. It was kind of her game plan, but we kind of ganged up on her, Jason and I, so we had Shane, and then once she had Shane, she goes, what in the world was I thinking? Kids are awesome. This is our whole lives. But we've always worked together, and you have to kind of fit them in when they come. So, and also, Shane was a handful. He was a guy that was always on the move, and she needed some rest before she was ready to take on another one. And then Chase came, same mom, same dad, and he was just a piece of cake. So, it's just interesting. So she was, geared up and ready to have another one, a little bit shorter time frame when Daniel came along.
You and Kathy make a great couple, and I haven't met your boys, but it'd be great to someday do that. Let's talk about, you brought it up, your days playing tennis. This kind of started you on your journey, did it not?
You know, yeah, it actually started before then, to be honest with you, because when being moving, and then but I'll get right to the tennis, but I, you know, I started when my dad moved around and my family and me moved around, my dad got stationed in different places. It was interesting. I've always been an athlete, and I've always found that, you know, one place you live, you know, for me as an athlete, they go, you know, I remember in Southern California, I was the superstar, you know, in football. It was like, oh, he's so fast. I go, gee, I'm fast. And, you know, you take in what other people tell you who you are. I go, wow, I'm fast. I'd run for touchdowns. We moved to North Carolina and had a new coach, new philosophy. And coach would go, dang, Austin, you're slow as molasses. And I go, oh, my gosh. You know, in California, I was fast. I'm slow here. What's wrong with me? And, you know, I started running the football, looking behind me. Who's going to catch me? Total different philosophy or way of looking at things. So I started slowing down. I became what he told me I was. I even changed my body style. I became fat because I no longer looked at myself as this lean and mean machine, so to speak. It's so interesting how we let others, especially when we're young, tell us who we are. We still do that later on in life, though, too. So I became fascinated with the fact that, hey, you know what? I'm the same guy. Why do I look at myself differently? You know, we ended up moving to Hawaii after, that was back in North Carolina. We moved to Hawaii. My dad got stationed there. And I got lucky. I overheard the coaches. They didn't tell me directly. They said, hey, you know that Austin, that new kid? He's kind of quick. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm quick again. Thank God. I don't know why, but I'm quick again. You know, and I lost the weight, and I became who I was before. So it was something that really stayed in me of like, wow, why do we let out? You know, even as a kid, I had these thoughts. So when I went to college, I actually went to college on a football baseball scholarship. And I was going to play professional baseball, but I was in a horrendous car accident between my freshman and sophomore year in college. And I played tennis to rehabilitate myself. And then I transferred down to San Diego State, and I decided I liked playing the individual sport.
Right.
I love team sports. But at that point in my life, I really was enjoying playing the independent sport. So I took that up really late. And but I feel very, very blessed because, you know, I went on to get a world ranking, to be able to travel the entire world at a young age. And, boy, you talk about another ground of learning. And then because I was so fascinated with this, of who we are, you know, who we really are and how we shape ourselves, I got a degree in psychology before I went on the tour because I thought, you know, I want to come back. I want to coach. I want to have an understanding how people think, how it all works, so that if I'm going to coach, because I saw the influence coaches had on my life. And if you're going to have that kind of influence, you know, you can have real negative influence or you can have positive influence. I wanted to be sure I was giving the kids that I coached a positive experience. Well, I went out, played professional tennis, learned a whole lot. You learn a lot through winning. You learn a lot through losing, probably more through losing than you do through winning, if you allow yourself to. You either crumble up and give up or you, you know, you see, you know, how you can grow through that experience. And
right.
So I learned so much. When I came back from playing and traveling the world, I didn't want to go back to school and teach and coach. I got, you know, I still was fascinated with it, but I got some opportunities. When I came back, because of the tennis, I played in a pro celebrity tennis tournament, and then I got asked to read for a movie, and then I got involved in movies and television because, you know, how can you resist, right? And then I was so into music that when I played on the tour, I always had my guitar with me. I was always writing songs and, you know, probably really bad songs, but, anyway, it was a great way to express my myself as I traveled. So one thing led to another that I met who became a good friend. He founded the rock group Kansas, Phil Ehart. He was the drummer of the group, and we became just really great friends. And we finally decided, you know, he was really into tennis, I was really into music, and said, let's bring the two worlds together for charity. Well, it had never been done. No one said it could be done. In fact, Kansas, this was back in the late 70s, Kansas was huge. And so we were able to get the record companies in New York. We had a meeting with all the top heads of record labels. And I said, you know what, you'll never do it. Because remember, the president of CBS said, as president of CBS, I could never get a musician to donate their time for anything. And so we walked out of that meeting, and Phil and I looked at each other and said, are we going to do this? And went, yeah, we're going to do this. Yeah, we're crazy enough. we had enough passion, we had enough desire. Well, I want to talk about desire in a moment, but we ended up having that first one in Atlanta, and it was so interesting because, I mean, we had every major act: Queen, Santana, Commodores, America, Loverboy, Survivor, of course, Kansas. I mean, I could just keep going on. I'm missing so many great bands. You know, we had Journey. It was so amazing. It totally flipped out the music industry, going, oh, my gosh, this could be done. Out of it, some unbelievably great things came out of it. You know, Live Aid, Farm Aid, Hands Across America, all these great things, because people saw that it could work. It could work. You could bring, and musicians were willing to stand up for a cause. And, you know, out of it, I was back in 1991, I got asked, we did them for several years, but they came so big that I was doing it all for charity, and I'm like, hey, you know, I gotta make a living too. But I did the last few we did because the Grammys came to me and said, hey, we want to start the Grammy Foundations. Will you help? I'm thinking, Grammys? You guys can get to all the musicians. But you know what? I guess we had the formula for how to bring it together. So we did it, and then actually in 1991, I was blessed to be given the Presidential Merit Award from the Grammys. So it was that was something that, you know, when you get things at the time, you know, you're just like, well, yeah, okay, you know. But now, looking back, I really treasure it more now than I did when I actually, you know, got it. Because my motto basically back then was, people ask, how did you get in this position? How did you get to be the guy that gets to put these things on? My answer was, I'm willing to clean toilets. and they look at me like, what in the world does that mean? It just meant that I was willing to do anything to make it happen. And I think because of that, I didn't really even understand the magnitude of what Bill and I, and then my, you know, Kathy, who became my wife now for 25 years, we started together. And it's funny because
our friend Harv Eker, you know, he always says, successful people are willing to do things that others are not.
Well, that's it. And again, I keep teasing. I'm going to talk about desire because that's what it gets down to. In a moment, I'll tell you a little story about that. But I wanted to complete a thought about cleaning toilets.
Go ahead.
I think about that now. You know, I'm a little bit older. And now, I got to be really honest with you, I'm no longer willing to clean toilets. I hire people to clean toilets. I guess, you know, you go, you know, it's not like, you know, you have to be able to do everything, but then you also have to take a look at your time and your value of your time. And I think that if I wasn't willing to clean toilets, I couldn't have gotten to where I am today. Now I understand that it takes that dedication. I still have to work it hard and do all the things, but I have to look at where my talents are best used. And if I can get other people in to do some of the things that I was willing to do anything, then you can still accomplish everything. You become more of a leader in the way that you recognize what your skill sets are, and you're true to those. I, for many years, kind of wandered in having my weaknesses get in the way of my strength. And I'm sure people can relate to that. And I realized that I can't let my weaknesses get in the way of my strength. I've got to focus on my strength, not ignore my weaknesses, mm-hmm. but not let them get in the way, but let them come and develop them, but also allow help to come in those places where I might be weak. It's just recognizing that.
Let me back up a little bit, because you wrote the book, you were co-writer on the book, Songwriter for Dummies. You were talking about you were
Songwriting for Dummies, yes.
Songwriting for Dummies. Where did that come along?
That is a funny story, very funny story in itself. I never planned to write that book. You know, it's a very popular book. It's done extremely well. In fact, the second edition just came out this last year. It was first, I think our first edition came out in 2001. Well, I had back to my mental performance coaching. You know, once I did the acting thing, I was in some blockbuster movies, I had done television, and I decided that, you know what, my purpose, I love doing this, but this was not my purpose. I knew my purpose was to coach. You know, way back when I was a younger kid, I think I knew it somewhere in my heart. And so, I was running a record label too at one time with Universal. I knew that wasn't, I mean, it was a part of my journey, but it wasn't my ultimate calling, so to speak. And so I came full circle all the way back to coaching, which I just thrive in and I love so much. And I love to lift people up, you know, because it lifts me up, to be honest with you. It keeps me fresh and vibrant. And so I had coached the U.S. Olympic team at the World Cup, and we had gone to Scotland. And it was really fascinating how these guys rose up, and we went and had the best results in the history of the sport. Now, I wasn't the head coach. I was the head coach. Got it? You with me? I was the mental head.
So
it was really remarkable how well they did. And then I came back. I got asked to do the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they had been in the cellar that year, and they won the pennant. And I'm thinking, you know, this is amazing. This stuff really, really works. So I started writing a book about it, my experiences and the processes I go through to help, you know, the athletes achieve their dreams and desires on the playing field. You know, I look at the athletic field as just my laboratory. What we do there can be applied to anything in life. Well, now we'll go back to heart. How you do anything is how you do everything type of thing. You know, so it's my laboratory with a scoreboard. Anyway, I started writing the book, and Bill Gladstone, who's my agent, I had already had a book out, and so Bill was my agent, and I came back, I said, you know, I'm writing this, you know, and he takes it to New York to sell it, and I get a call from him. This is back in, oh, I don't know, I don't think cell phones were as big back then. I mean, I can't believe it. It's only like maybe in 2000 or 1999, if we all can really relate to that. But I get a call on my answer machine at home, which we all used to have, tape machine. And it said, Dave, I'm in New York. I've sold your book. I've got an advancement for you. You're writing Songwriting for Dummies. And I laughed. You know, actually, I was out of town. My Kathy got the message. She called me. She goes, Dave, when did you decide to write Songwriting for Dummies? I went, what are you talking about? She says, well, Bill called, left you a message saying he's got an advancement for you. He has a contract for you. You're writing Songwriting for Dummies. I started laughing. I said, oh, Bill, that's so funny. He must have called the wrong client. I howled at that. I thought, oh, that's so funny. So I called Bill laughing to say, Bill, you can't believe what you did. You called me and told me I had this contract and an advancement to write this book. He goes, well, you do. I stopped. I go, what? I said, I can't write that book. I'm not writing that book. Can you believe that? Everyone loves to write books, and everybody wants to write books. And I'm going, I don't care. How much are they paying me? Oh, It was a very funny conversation.
Well, it's funny. I spent the weekend with William Gladstone, with Bill, and what a nice guy.
Yeah, he is. He's a great guy, and I love Bill. You know, I was in his movie this past year, Tapping the Source, and I actually, you know, did the music supervision and brought in all the music for it, too, because he twisted my arm again. Boy, he's good. Boy, he's good. But anyway, so when I thought about this, I'm going, gosh, I don't know. I've never written a top 10 hit, you know? And I'm thinking, how can I write Songwriting for Dummies? Well, this has got to be from, you know, I like, you know, there's a lot of coaches out there that speak about this, but they don't live what they speak. And I'm not trying to be judgmental. They still have a value. They're still this. But just for me, like an example, for me to coach athletes, I had to go and become number one in tennis so that I knew these principles work. I was world ranked when I was on the tour, but I never went to the top in the world because I didn't know how to use these principles. Later on, as I started coaching others, I went out and played the senior tour and I became number one. So I know from a personal experience, not everybody has to go through that. This is just the way I am. So when it came to writing this book, I'm going, I've never written a top 10 hit. I've been involved in a lot of big hits, and by that time I had, but I had not written them. I'm thinking, boy, a friend of mine who we had just done two records together, who has written 27 top 10 hits, and one of his songs went to number one in the world at the same time. That's only been done maybe a handful of times. So I thought, I'll call Jim and ask him if he wants to co-write with me, because then it gave it, for me, credibility. And Jim is such a great guy, and having 27 top 10 hits, and he's a storyteller, he's funny, and so I called him, and I said, Jim, I've got a contract here, I'd like to co-write it with me. And then we had another co-writer who would take a lot of it and put it in the Dovey's form. As it turned out, it ended up turning out to be Kathy, who's a brilliant writer, my wife. You know, that was probably the saving grace, is that I'm not only married to someone I love dearly, but she's a absolutely brilliant, brilliant writer. She goes write some of the books she's writing right now just knock me out. Knock me out. They're gonna be such blockbusters when they come out. So anyway, that made it a lot easier to do this book also. And so that's Jim Peter who wrote it with me, and the one song that went to number one in the world, which is a funny story in itself, is Eye of the Tiger. If anybody remembers the movie Rocky, Eye of the Tiger still gets played almost more than any other pump-up song for workouts. Eye of the Tiger is still around. It gets remade all the time. There's been a rap version. There's been Starbucks did it as a commercial version. And it's been just, as Jim says, it's a gift that keeps giving. One time when I was going to get on the stage for Heart Records event, Never Work Again, I called Jim because I wanted to give facts about the music world. And I'd never asked Jim, I'd known him forever, and I said, hey Jim, tell me, just from your writing royalties, just so I can have some facts here, I've never asked you this, but Eye of the Tiger, and he also wrote when he was 17, and he sang a song called Vehicle, which you hear on commercials all the time. It's just a great, great song. It was the theme song for Chevrolet during the Olympics, during the Salt Lake Olympics and all that. And I said, just those two songs. I don't want to know. You've written so many, but just those two songs. How much money have you made in writing royalties? And he paused. He goes, gosh, I guess somewhere north of 20 million. I couldn't even speak. This has been a friend of mine for years. And I know he doesn't live badly, but he's such a casual, humble guy. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. So the book was written, and then I went to another good friend of mine, Kenny Loggins, who is, I just think, such a brilliant writer, brilliant artist, and asked him if he would write the foreword, and he was happy to do it. And it's funny, I used to tell people, if you don't like the book, buy the book for the foreword. Kenny Loggins is brilliant. and then when we got asked to do the new one, I was thinking, who do we want to write the foreword for the new one? And I first thought of Paul McCartney. And I thought, yeah, Paul would be perfect. I mean, he's one of the greatest songwriters of all time. And right. So I started, and I have ways to get a hold of Paul. And, but Paul wasn't really responding. The publisher was going, come on, we're getting a deadline, And I'm going, okay, why won't Paul respond to this? And so then, this is a true story. I was taking a shower, and all of a sudden it came to me. American Idol is such a popular show, and Kara DeGuardi, who was at the time a very popular judge, now J-Lo and Steven Tyler have taken over, she was a very popular judge at the time and a great, great songwriter. I went, she is the one that needs to write this. And so I'm going, oh, that was a good shower moment. I don't know Kara. Why is she the one to write this? She is the one to write this, but I don't know her. So I started, it's one of those things. I figured that I know so many people that I will finally find someone that's her best friend or something, Right, exactly. So I just put out a few phone calls, and finally I found the person that I knew that was one of her good friends. And so I said, perfect. And so then I got her number, and I got her partner's number. I actually had a cell phone, the whole nine yards. But I got a hold of her partner, who manages her, and I when I first started off with him, he's like, who, what, are you kidding me? Why in the world would she ever write the foreword to this book? And I said, and this is true, I said, because it was a shower moment. He's like, what? I say, shower moments can't be denied. She needs to write this book. She needs to write this forward. And, we ended up it was going to sound like it was going to be a very short conversation. We ended up being on the phone for about an hour. By the end of it, he's going, she has to write this. She has to write this forward. She is the perfect person to write this forward. And at the end, I said, well, hey, you know, I told you up front it was a shower moment.
That's cool.
So, and she has her, she has written, a lot of people don't know this about her. She has written, she has songs that have sold on albums collectively over 171 million albums.
Wow.
So she was the perfect one to write. And the thing that I loved about what she wrote was, and this is a good thing for anybody who's out there who's starting their business or, you know, is that it was 7 years. 7 years. Now, I'm not saying everybody has to go through this, but this is when you talk about desire. You know, we're talking about when to fold them, when to hold them. We've kind of gone off on a lot of really interesting stuff. That's good stuff. But she went 7 years without making a dime writing.
Wow.
Not making a dime. 7 years of it. But she, that's why I said I'm going to tell you about desire because that's the key. She couldn't help herself. She couldn't help herself. She couldn't say no. And lo and behold, now she's made multi millions of dollars because of her songwriting.
And that's
but for 7 years.
You know the book Three Feet from Gold, it's that kind of.
Yeah.
If you have the desire and you just can't stop, you're going to hit.
Well, it's just that's what it gets down to, and here's where I'll go ahead and tell you what my feelings are. You know, some people ask me if I'm a motivational speaker because they see me speak, and I go, no, I'm not a motivational speaker. You know, that's too vague. I don't know what I am, but I do try to rise up your desire. You find that you can find your passion, and here's the difference that I find between motivation and desire. And I love this. I think it was Bert Goldman that I heard that told me this story. And I love this story. Yeah, this guy, you know, goes to the master going, Master, I'm so motivated to find enlightenment, but I can't find enlightenment anywhere. But I'm so motivated to find enlightenment, and I know you would be the one to tell me, how do I find, enlightenment? And so the master took him, and there was a bed of water there, and he goes, get down on your knees and look into your reflection in the water. So he went out to the river, and he on his knees, and he looked into his reflection, and he's looking. He's like going, ha, you know, I don't know. I this is the master. I guess you know something's going to come out of this. And all of a sudden, the master takes his hand and pushes the guy's head into the water. And he goes, what? You know, and he gets under the water, and he's got about a foot under the water. And he's like, oh, this is where you find enlightenment. So his eyes are wide open, looking for enlightenment. You know, he goes, okay, this is it. This must be it. So 30 seconds have gone by. Now a minute have gone by, and he's like, okay, this is, you know what, I need to breathe here. I need to breathe. I'm not sure about this. So he starts reaching to tap the master's hand, saying, okay, you let me up now. We'll find enlightenment another way. And the master, instead of letting him up, he pushes his head further into the water. And he's like, what? What's going on? So he's there. And now, you know, minute and a half, 2 minutes. And now he starts, like, going crazy. He can't breathe. He's, you know, going crazy. And he starts kicking and wailing. Finally just wails off and hits the master, pops his head up, going, what are you doing? What are you doing? It says, when your desire to find enlightenment comes to the point of your desire to breathe, you will find enlightenment.
There you go.
And I know for myself, sometimes I've had my head in the water. And it's sometimes it's been something that's taken, you know, something that has triggered to know truly, this is my passion, this is my desire. It's one thing to be motivated, you know, it's one thing. A lot of us get motivated, but motivated tends to die. It tends to be here, and then it dies. But when your desire comes so strong as the desire to breathe, then you're on the right path, you know. Speaking about Jim Peterick, we did when 9/11 hit, we were so struck like so many people were that day, and he and Johnny Van Zant, who was the lead singer for Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know, were on the phone and they're talking, we got to do something, and they included me in the conversation, and all of a sudden they wrote this song called The Day America Cried, and it was such an incredible song that I said, we need to record this. And then before you know it, we had all these great great, great artists who are very, have been very successful, all feeling the pain. And so we started making this album called, and it ended up being titled, The Day America Cried. And it was a phenomenal, phenomenal record. And it was one way that these musicians and all of us could kind of go through our pain and express something that was, might be positive out of it. Today, you know, if you ever get your hands on The Day America Cried, it is such a motivating, sensational record. And but anyway,
this kind of segues us perfectly into what we want, what I wanted to talk about. I thought when I brought it up with you, I thought it was such an interesting subject, because you talk about, you know, having that desire and really pushing forward through failure after, you know, through failure after failure, the road to success. And one of the things I asked you was, so when do you know when to stop? You know, I brought up the American Idol deal, where the singer gets up there and he's awful, and everybody says you're awful, and of course he screams back, "You guys don't know what you're talking about. I'm a great singer, and I'll be back. You'll see. You haven't seen the last of me," and everybody, including all the audience, knows that this guy really can't sing. So I asked you, when do you know when to hold him? When do you know when to fold him? When do you know that your idea that you've given up your home mortgage to get your idea out there, and you've, you know, hocked your kids, and, you know, when do you know when to quit?
You know, it's such a great question, and I love it. That was one of the things that you know, when you and I talked before, you know, when we made the date to do this, you know, the when to hold them, when to fold them is such a great question, because it is so true in business. And, you know, some of the athletes that I work with that are, you know, had great careers, when do you finally say, you know, I can't compete at this level anymore, you know, or whatever it is. The obstacles are too tough. They're too this, they're too that. And right. I don't know, you know, what I would love to do, actually love to do, is have some of the people listening to this, you know, you can go to, if you don't mind me saying, extrememetalfocus.com. It's a blog. I would love people just to go there and start, you know, answering the question and going with that dialogue, because I think it's a great dialogue, and I think that there's power in numbers of thoughts, because it's an age old question. And one of the things that I have learned through all my experiences, one is, I think you first have to ask, why am I doing this? The why is probably the most important question, and a lot of people go right by the why. They just jump in, oh, you know, let's do this. We can make money. I can be famous. I can be this. I can be that. But problem is the moment you hit a roadblock, the why isn't really something that it reaches you all the way to your soul, then you do need to fold them. You need to, you know, and you know, take the singer on American Idol. You know, I know for myself, when I stopped playing professional tennis, and then I got into movies, and I had a chance to be in a lot of really good movies. Not a lot, but a few good movies. I really wanted to record, and I had so many great people that were willing to record with me. I mean, just phenomenal, very successful people. So I recorded, and I had a pretty good record. I mean, I had a pick hit in Billboard, but I realized that my why, when I look at it, my why was, well, I want to be famous. I want people to see me do this. I want to see this. And that is not a reason to be in the music industry. That is not a reason to be up there, that I want to be a rock star. Because that's crash course. You know, that's headed for a crash landing. I mean, there are some people who do get through maybe on that, but their lives are never fulfilled because they never really had a strong enough why. That's why you see artists that are very successful. They have the fame, they have the money, and yet they're addicts, because they've never taken the time to thought, why am I here? What really is my purpose? Right. And that gives you the strength, and that is where you come back to desire. And so I was talking about doing the record, The Day America Cried. Well, we were asked to go on CNN on the anniversary of 9/11 and bring the guys in and do some live performing. And so we were driving to the studio at CNN, and Don Barnes, the lead singer for 38 Special, a great band. Don Barnes, a great man. Well, one of the guys in the car, the only unknown, is a guy that I had signed to my record label, and he's just an incredible talent. Brian, the young singer, was asking Don, you know, trying to pick his brain while we're on the way to CNN Studios, you know, gosh, everything he could. And Don looked at him and said, look, don't do this. Do not do this unless you can't say, I can't help it, I have to. Because this business will eat you up. Don't do it unless the music just can't stop coming out of you. And I thought, wow, that's a pretty powerful statement. And that is, you know, for him, his why was because, his why happened to be because he felt at the deepest part of him, there's no way to control that he was put in this, you know, this life to let this music come out, whether one person listened to it, whether 1,000 listened to it, whether 1,000,000, it didn't matter. He couldn't help himself but bring the music out. So I think that if you need to take some time to get to the why. I've done a lot of different things in my life, and a lot of people look at me and say, God, you're so successful. You did movies. You did music. You had, you know, you played professional sport. You did all these things. But to be honest with you, if I look back, I never had a strong enough why. I mean, I never understood to take the time to find out, and that's why I've done so many things. I'm blessed now. I feel blessed because all those experiences has led me to be exactly where I am right now, doing what I have such a desire, and I feel like it is my purpose for being here. It actually gives me understanding now of why I did everything and why I went through, and I hit roadblocks. And sometimes I couldn't find the way through the roadblocks, and if I look back, the reason is because I didn't have a strong enough why. I didn't have a strong enough purpose.
Let me just cut in here because I was just interviewing Marion LeJudis, who just cut a song with Cyndi Lauper. And when I was interviewing her about the whole thing, one thing she said struck me, and it has to do with exactly what you're talking about. I said, so why do you do this? She started singing at 40 years and writing and singing at 40. And
wow.
She said, well, the whole thing was mainly because I was scared to death to do it. I was scared to write because I didn't think that anybody would like it. I was scared to sing because I didn't think anybody would like my singing. And so it was never about making money and being on stage or becoming famous. It was really about me dealing with my fear and becoming my authentic self.
Wow.
And now,
well, there you have it.
You offer.
Yeah, and there you have it. Then you become, I know when I wrote my first book, it was so funny, I can remember so clearly that I was going to do a book signing at Barnes & Noble, and I was, the week before I got the LA Times, I was looking up in the LA area at the time, and on the calendar section, there's a picture and a story about that I'm appearing at Barnes & Noble. I thought, God, that's cool. That's really cool. And then I went down to that Barnes & Noble and I had the books in the window right at the front. I'm going, wow, how cool is this? But then the actual day of the time that I was going in to do the talk and do the signing, I was so uptight. I was mean to my wife. I was mean to my kids. And, you know, just because, and finally, luckily, I have a great wife who just said, Dave, get out of the way. Get out of the way of yourself. You know, you're so uptight, and I realized the reason I was uptight is that what if no one shows? My picture's
right.
Been in the LA Times. The book is in the front of the store, in the window. What when I get there if there's no one in there? And that was my, and she says, you know what? If one person shows up, is that not now important enough for this book? And I went, wow. It's so good to get. Sometimes we just need that slap in the face. And I said, that is such great wisdom. So I drove to the Barnes & Noble. And it was a big Barnes & Noble and had an upstairs, escalator that you go up. And I got there early. Kathy and the boys were coming later because I had hired a violinist to play music, before I spoke. This was my first time and I wanted it special. And,
right.
I wanted to make sure the violinist was there. And as I'm going up the escalator, this lady's on right behind me, and she goes, oh, are you here to meet the author? And I went, what do I tell her? Do I tell her, hey, it's me? Or do I just not say anything and then get up to the podium and go, ha-ha, I like that. I just go, well, I am the author. She goes, oh, my God, that book has changed my life.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have my one. And it was such an incredible feeling. I didn't care if anybody showed up. I really didn't. Because I had the one. And the thing is, the book had only been out for a week. That's the first. It was called, and I'll talk a lot, it's called The Unfinished Cross, Listen to the Voice Within. And so I went like, wow, that's amazing. So when I got up, finally, you know, it was time, and, you know, a lot of people ended up showing up. So there wasn't just one. But I spoke to her. She spoke to me so unbelievably. So when I got done with the talk and I was doing the book signing, and I was, you know, I probably signed for a good hour, you know, she came by, and I just looked at her, and I went, how do you even know this book existed, you know? And she says, well, my psychotherapist told me to read it, that it would change my life. I was dumbfounded. I didn't even know what to say. I'm just absolutely dumbfounded. And so she goes on, right? And I finished book, signing books, and then my wife and the kids, we go out to dinner. And I start telling Kathy the story about the one. I got my one. It was so incredible. And the first thing she says, well, did you find out who her psychoanalyst was? I'm like, no, I couldn't even think at that time. I was dumbfounded. I couldn't even talk at that time. You know, just, well, you should have gotten this, who he was. You know, I'm like, well, yeah, if I was thinking, I probably should have. So, you know, but oh, well. And then I looked across the restaurant, and over at a table across on the other side of the restaurant is this lady. So, I went over to her, and I said, gosh, could you do me a favor? Can you tell me who in the world is your psychoanalyst? Because I got to find out what it is about this book that he told you to read it.
Yeah, you
and so
a
she gave me a,
right?
Yeah, you know, and find out what he was thinking. No, and, you know, find out what his name and what his number is. So, you know, the next day I called him, and I asked him. I said, oh my gosh! And he was very excited to speak to me. And I said, how? I said, this book has been out a week. How can you already say that this book will change somebody's life? He says, well, I went into Barnes & Noble. There was a big display of the book. I picked it up. And I, to be honest with you, I haven't even read the whole book. I said, really? And you're recommending it? He goes, yeah. Because I saw enough in it. Because you have all throughout the book, I am here, go ahead. And he said, those are the strongest words you can tell anybody in life. She needed to hear those exact words because she didn't believe in herself. And you said, I am here, go ahead. At that point, I'm like, okay. I went on the whole tour, and I called it the Power of One tour. Every place I went, I was looking for one.
You know, it's so powerful, this stuff. You know, I write a blog for commercial real estate, and I think you know that. Some people may not. And when I started writing it, I just didn't feel I knew enough about commercial real estate. I do mostly media to really write a blog, but everybody was telling me I needed to. Because I'm a doom and gloomer, and whenever I write these doom and gloom vlogs about the economy, I always feel like nobody wants to hear this stuff. You know, nobody wants to hear bad stuff. And I was at a meeting. This meeting had nothing to do with commercial real estate. It was some other meeting I was going to with my wife. A lady came up to me, and she goes, aren't you JW? I said, yes, I am. Why? She goes, I've read your blog. And I said, really? This is not even a commercial real estate convention we're at. She says, no, my husband was getting ready to buy an apartment building with a bunch of partners, and we read your blog about, you know, how the economy wasn't ready for buying yet, and he decided to pull out. Of course, the deal went south, and we would have lost everything.
Wow.
Immediately I thought, how stupid of me to think that, you know, that I shouldn't be writing this stuff. I'd saved one person.
But you know what? That's the beauty of it. Anybody listening on this, you owe it to yourself. That you owe it to yourself that you're here for a special reason. Don't judge it. If it's one person, if it's whatever, you know, I mean, yeah, we're talking about maybe a larger scale, but it doesn't have to be on a larger scale. I mean, I was with Drew Brees, you know, the great quarterback, who's such a great, great guy, and his wife, and he wrote a book last year that I said really, really had a super impact on my son who's playing in college. It came to him right at the right time. The message was just what he needed to hear. And she looked at me and said, wow. She goes, he didn't even want to write the book to begin with. But, you know, he just felt like, okay. And now they hear so many people say, wow. You know, and it goes way beyond his stardom on football. Now it's something different. You know, he's got a book that really speaks his mind, and it's a beautiful thing. And so I recommend everyone to find it. You know, we all take our journeys to find our path. Now, I know we haven't really addressed, because we've gone to so many great areas today, as I knew we would, you know, when you and I talked.
Right.
So we've been across the board, but when to hold them, when to fold them. I just want to really be strong on that. That is something that, for me, the why is so important. I just want to go over that so you really hear that. The why. Why am I doing this? What really am I supposed to be doing here in life? And you know what? It doesn't, don't judge it. Don't judge it. Someone asked me, with all the people I've met, who has impressed me the most? And I've met some of the, you know, unbelievable people I've been blessed to meet. And I said, Maria, I can't even think of her last name right now, but I said, Maria, and they go, well, who's that? Never heard of her. She's our maid. I've never met a woman that is so passionate about what she does. I'm inspired every time she comes to our house. And isn't that the bottom line as far as living? Isn't it about joy? Isn't it about sharing joy? So much of the time we're searching, once I get this, and then once I get that, then I'll have joy. Why can't we start with joy and then, you know, not a bad place to begin with? That's why, again, I mentioned some of these musicians or some of these athletes or movie stars that are so successful. They think that once they have everything, they will find joy. And the truth of the matter is they're so depressed because they have everything, but they never learn how to bring joy into their life. So let's get our priorities, turn it around a little bit. And then when you can
How do you usually coach people on because people are listening to this and going, well, that's easy for you to say, but so how would you tell people how to find joy?
Okay. Now you're getting technical, but I mean, when I say technical, that would take me I have a whole program called Extreme Mental Focus that I'm unleashing here next year. And I actually, you said you see me speaking all over. You know, truthfully, in the last 2 years, you saw me speak a lot, but I've been in the trenches because I know this is in me and I have to do this. There's no doubt about it. So I'm creating a whole program on Extreme Mental Focus because if you practice things and you learn, you got to understand how your mind works. You have an outer consciousness and you have a subconscious. Okay, everyone knows that. But the two different parts of your brain. And we say in our outer conscious, say, oh, I want this, I want this. Well, the problem is we're already programmed. Our automatic response and our subliminal has already been developed from childhood and different things. And so they're not in sync, and that's why you don't get the result. So if you're going to actually shift your life around to be successful in this, you have to get those in sync, and you have to, there's processes that I've developed that work on the subliminal so they're in harmony. They work together so that there's strength. You know, because your subconscious mind is going to do whatever it's most comfortable with, even if it's the worst thing in the world for you. It's just, you know, it's a learned response. Once you hit a certain emotion, that emotion is going to trigger something that then it goes into the automatic response. I mean, I could go on this for hours, but I won't. So if you start a program, which I've developed, there's others out there, call it Extreme Mental Focus, because I've been able to do it with the pro athlete, and then I can take it and do it into every aspect of life. Because I've been doing this for, 30 years now of really studying the mind and the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And how we respond, and then I have the scoreboard, remember, as my laboratory telling me, that doesn't register, right? It's not all about winning or losing, but you still have a scoreboard that kind of, it helps you see, because how you live and what you are expressing on your action really speaks to where your belief system is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if your belief system isn't in line to where you want to be, you need to learn how to shift that belief system. It's like, and I'm sure people on this phone have heard this expression before, but it's such a good way of explaining it. Your thermostat is at 72 degrees. If it goes above 72, your air conditioning kicks in and it comes back to 72. If it goes below, your heating kicks in. And it goes above, it comes back to 72. It always comes back. So financially we're the same way. We have this thermostat, and sometimes we're successful and we have it, but all of a sudden, whatever kicks in, medical bills, this, and all of a sudden we're back to 72. Or we're under some kind of desire, some kind of something, oh my God, kicks in and we're back to 72. So if you really, really want shift, you gotta be able to go beyond your outer conscious mind. You have to be willing to go to the subconscious, which for me, also taps into the spiritual side of things. It, you know, if you're going to solve problems here in the physical world, I feel you need to go up above and grab the wisdom that's out there and bring it to this physical existence. I know I'm getting a little, you know, maybe passionate is coming out. Maybe that's the word I should use. But I am very, very passionate about this subject. And so, you know, there's two things that I'm doing right now. Well, not two. But one of the things is
two things, Dave.
I have a television show coming out also beginning of next year called Beyond the Field, showing how these players have faced adversity. It's called Beyond the Field Players of Faith, because, you know, I'm blessed to work with guys that and faith is a big word, but they have used their faith to get them through adversity, through struggles, and through victory, and their life is more balanced and more joy because of it. So, you know, I don't want to be part, when you talk about the economy and you say, hey, I hate blogging this, how negative this stuff is, but, you know, you have to do it. Well, for me, you know, as far as people feel and what they do, that's all controlled by us. So I want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. You know, I could be like, you know, CNN News and just keep giving everybody the crap that's out there, because that sells. But I don't want to be a part of that. I want to create a show that people go, wow, that's awesome. I'm inspired. And they can relate to it in their own life and see somebody who they thought maybe had it easy, and they find out all the struggles within their life and how they've gone through to get through to where they are and how they maintain it. And so that's one thing I'm doing. And then I've created this whole extreme mental focus program. We don't really have the website up yet or anything yet. We do have a blog that we just kind of put up called Extreme Mental Focus. You can go there, extrememmentalfocus.com. That whole thing is going to shift. You know, come January, you're going to see a whole big, you know, cool thing going on. But you can go there now, I believe, I pray, that you can go there and the subject of when to hold them, when to fold them. Because how do I learn? How do I grow? How do I expand? Well, I do it through one. I've learned how to quiet my mind. I take the time. You have to take the time to slow down and go beyond this physical world, basically. You allow wisdom. Some of the greatest songwriters that I've had a chance to know, you know, they didn't do it themselves. They didn't rely on themselves. They went beyond themselves to tap into something greater than them. Well, you know, they're not special. They're not the only ones who can do this. Anybody can do it if you learn how to do it. And it's something you can learn. So I take the time to do that, but I also pay attention to anybody. I don't care who it is. There's wisdom all around us. A lot of people don't even recognize it because they don't have ears to hear or eyes to see it. So if you go on the blog and start putting some stuff, I don't care what it is, I want to learn from it. And maybe from what I learn, I'll express what I have. So it's a sharing. It's not that I have all the answers and you guys need to learn from me. I have some answers. And every day new answers are coming and new gifts are coming. And guess what? Maybe someone out there will give me a gift far beyond that I've given them, because I think it's time for us all to start sharing. Some people are afraid to say, well, that's, you know, somebody said, well, you share your ideas and your thoughts so freely. You know, what if someone rips them off? Well, you know what? If they do, they do. Because I believe in an abundance world.
Not lack.
I believe there's more to it.
Right. You know, that's what I love about you, Dave. You know, first of all, you're not, you've never been, I don't think anybody would ever call you a lack-minded thinker. And also, you're always looking for, you can see it in you, in every situation, every person you meet, you're looking for their brilliance, not what's wrong with them.
Boy, I love that. Thank you. Boy, that just made my day, because that's what I feel my life, I really have committed to. There's another project, can't even go into it now, we're talking about, that is building an island, and the whole theme is common ground. Looking for our where we can come together rather than what our differences are. And too many times in life, we look for, you know, and I've been guilty. I'm not, you know, but, you know, your judgment stops you from the brilliance of someone else. Hey, our own judgment stops us from our own brilliance. We just shut it down because we judge it, and it never comes out of us. So, gosh, that made my day. It really did, because you just hit something I'm very, very passionate about.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you. Hi. So, right now, the blog you have is, say it again?
It's called Extreme Mental focus.com. Not a whole lot there, to be honest with you. You know, right. There's so many, the whole big thing is being built, and all of a sudden I thought, well, it's not building fast enough. So my son, who's brilliant, you know, I was on a phone call that was going to have 35,000 people on it. I thought, well, I want to at least put out some of the stuff that I'm doing, and I haven't even started really blogging every day or doing all the stuff you're supposed to. Going to do that, but I'm so knee-deep in it. But I, you know what, if someone goes on there, and I hope it works, I'll go back to make sure it does, and can at least, you know, come on there. You get me started, man, we can go to town on this, and we can have a lot of fun. And a lot of great answers will come from this. And it won't just all come from me. What I love to do is create the space for the brilliance that's in you, because I know it's there. I absolutely know it. You might not see it, but I see it. And I love to create the space for that brilliance to come out of you, rather than me try to tell you how brilliant I am and how I can do this and how I can do that. Every single one of us is brilliant. I have a football, high school football player right now that I'm having so much fun with, that I'm working with. He's a quarterback, and, you know, I saw so much brilliance in him, and he just didn't know. I said, where are you going to, play after you plan to play? He says, well, I'd love to, but, you know, no one's going to pay attention to me. You know, I haven't done anything. And I said, so, but wait a minute, what would you like to do? So I would love to, but, you know, and then he gave me all the reasons he wasn't going to do it. And I said, well, see, I look at you totally different. You don't even know how good you are, and you got to understand, I work with NFL players, and I see guys that don't have half your talent that are there. So what's keeping you from that? And he had no, you know, he just didn't, he couldn't believe that he could really do this. And it's funny, I've been working with him for now 3-4 weeks. Oh my gosh, this guy is a superstar. And now his whole way of looking at things is totally different. I didn't do anything but create the space for him to let his own brilliance. Right. No, I just saw it. He didn't see. And he didn't know how to tap into it. That's what I'm about. That's what turns me on.
Let me ask you this, Dave. Because I think my thought is that a lot of people, they compete against the world. And if you look at a person in their totality, you know, 90% of what a person is, you know, it's stuff that, the stuff they can't do well. In other words, I'm not a physicist. I'm not a sports player. I'm not a great writer. And we focus on those things and we compare them to the rest of the world, all the great writers. Well, if I say I can't write, then I compare myself to all great writers, and then, I can't write compared to them. But what I think we forget to do is forget about the 90% of stuff we can't do, focus on the 10% of the stuff we're brilliant at, and then not compete against the world, but just compete against ourselves to be growing daily and, you know, minute by minute.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing you can do, it's funny, you don't even know this, what you just brought up, is like, so I'm doing an extreme mental focus program. I have one of the programs is extreme mental focus in business. And I figure, who am I to, you know, I have my way in doing things, but I also bring in talents. You mentioned the scientists, Matt. I brought in a rocket scientist who did the space station, who's gone on to become an incredibly successful, businessman, been CEO of major, you know, international corporations, And I want his rocket scientist mind, because his mind is different than mine. I want to blend it and see what we come up with. So there's, you know, part of it is collaboration. Then I went to John Astroff, who's a good friend and a neighbor. I said, John, you know, you've studied the brain so well. I'm really fascinated because I work every day in this field, but I love some of your scientific background. And that. So I said, John, why don't you join us? So we'll mix in some of him. So what I'm doing is the same thing. Great songs are written. They're collaborated upon. Maybe I'm weak here. Maybe I'm strong here. So I have my strength. I go to a rocket scientist because I want precision in this whole approach to business. I want to see how his mind thinks and be able to share it in a way that isn't too scientific. It's like writing the book Songwriting for Dummies. The book is so successful because someone who's a major hit songwriter can read and go, I got something out of it. But someone who's never written a song in their life can now write a song. That's what it has to be. And so that's why I'm just doing this program. If I tried to do it all myself, yeah, I think you get a lot of value out of it, because I think through my experiences I've had a lot, but I'm not going to settle for all right. I always look for over the top. And right. So anybody out there.
Also, it's a matter of, J. Abraham has a great story about the, he says there's a guy who was taking rowing a boat across a pond with his girlfriend, and they get to the island, you know, to go have lunch, this little island to go have lunch. and he breaks out ice cream, which he had packed, and it was all melted. And so he gets really upset, and later on he invents something that we all know about, and everybody goes, ah, the cooler. And no, his name is Evinrude. His name was Evinrude. He invented the motor that gets you, put on the back of the boat and gets you there faster.
Oh, that's just funny.
By collaborating, you get to look at it from that 360-degree angle that you might not, as an independent person, go for.
Yeah, exactly. So you know what? I knew this would be a very inspiring phone call. I hope the people listening are as inspired as you and I are, you know. But I know I'm satisfied. I had a ball. So thank you.
That's great. How do we get... We're talking to Dave Austin, author, coach, father, husband, speaker, inspirational speaker, motivational speaker, and trainer. Where can we get a hold of you, Dave?
Well, you know, the best way right now is you can, I'll give you my personal email if you want, you know, because we're still developing some of the new stuff, but it's daa@mindworks2.com. mindworks2.com. So you can,
dog, alpha, right?
Yep. And then you can go to, you know, my old site is exceedyourpotential.com. That gives you kind of some stuff, but it's not really interactive. All that's being, exceed potential, not exceed your potential, exceedpotential.com. It just gives you, has some videos, but there's not an interaction, not the whole new thing. And then I have the blog that you guys who are listening to this are really going to kick me into gear, called extrememmentalfocus.com.
Extreme.
And I think that's the best. And that's the best way. And watch it as it shifts and turns this coming new year. And watch for the show. Watch for ads on the show, Beyond the Field.
This is all excellent. Dave, you know, it took me a while to get you on, but it was definitely worth it. I so appreciate your time. And can you give, parting words for the listeners?
Yeah, okay. What are the parting words I give you? Gosh. You know, right now, I'll just say, you know, my gurus that I pay attention to and I feel like I connect to them, you know, going to this quiet place, Gandhi, be the change you wish to see in the world. I mean, one man that had nothing but a desire to make a change made a huge difference. So I want to say that. You know, I'll even throw in a Steve Jobs on you. Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition.
That's wonderful. On that note, thank you so much, Dave, for coming on with us today. We really appreciate you. And everybody, this is J.W. Najarian with Dave Austin, wishing you guys a great day and an even better tomorrow. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to J.W. on Purpose with J.W. Najarian. You can find J.W. on Purpose at jwonpurpose.com. JW on Purpose is the property and is a trademark of Meta Media Group, and this audio is copyright 2011, and all rights are reserved.